Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Mark.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, this is going to be, I think, an absolutely fascinating period at the first part of the show. Why? Because we're going to be talking with Chris Gaynor, a man who has an absolute passion for rocketry, for space travel. We're going to be talking about his fascinating book, To a Distant Day, The Rocket Pioneers. Chris, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Well, I'm so delighted to have you here. You are a man that really has a passion for space. This is something that when I was reading your book, I was mesmerized by all of the detail and information that you had and the way that you were able to convey the history and its linkage from the past and how we got to where we are today. It's really fascinating. How did all of this get stirred up inside you? What made you become so passionate about this particular area?
Well, I guess it's not a particularly unusual story because, of course, I grew up in the 1960s, and that was a very exciting time for people who were interested in space or people were drawn into that interest by watching the moon race that went on between the United States and the Soviet Union, and it culminated in landing on the moon, which is so far our only visit by humans to another celestial body.
Now, you really are a historian of technology. You've authored other books about space, and in this book, Alfred Gordon is a man that had a lot of information to share with you. He's a former astronaut himself. Tell us about what aspect of the Apollo missions he was involved with.
Colonel Gordon. Apollo 15. I think was a very interesting mission because it was the fourth landing on the moon, but this is the first time they had sent a lunar rover to the moon, which permitted extended exploration, and the Apollo 15 landed on an absolutely spectacular landing site. It was sort of ringed by mountains, and then in front of it was a huge rill, you know, kind of like a lunar version of a river valley.
Uh-huh.
Now Colonel Worden was unfortunately wasn't landing there because he was the guy who had to keep the mothership going.
Mm-hmm.
But the command and service module was for that mission was outfitted with all sorts of extra equipment and left a satellite behind. So he was actually quite busy taking photographs from lunar orbit. And I guess if you didn't get to land on the moon, orbiting the moon was, a good consolation prize.
I'd say so. And he was up there for 12 days.
The flight went on for 12 days he would have spent about five of those days orbiting the moon, and three of them he would have been all by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of an unusual position to be in because everybody you know is a quarter of a million miles away, except for your two pals on the moon, and you're in orbit all by yourself. Uniquely alone is almost nobody else has been alone.
Yes, and you think of Space Odyssey 2001 and that particular movie and the impact it had on the psyche of people. And there was sometimes during that movie the feeling of aloneness with all of this technology around you. And that must have been in particular moments, although I'm sure he was so busy keeping his eye on all of this various workings of the technology that were around him, because you have to do that. You have to really pay attention because you don't have a rescue ship on the horizon. It just wasn't there at that time. So you really had to be a pioneer, which is one of the things that you emphasize in your book. Now, you got a master's degree in space studies at the University of North Dakota.
That's right.
I found that fascinating, and I don't know that everybody would be aware of the fact that there are specific programs that have space studies. How many universities in the United States have this kind of a program?
Not too many. A lot of people who do wind up working for, say, NASA or for the aerospace contractors in space, they would take aeronautical engineering, which encompasses both space and aviation. And this program at the University of North Dakota is quite unusual because it is kind of multidisciplinary. There is a lot of people who take it are more into the engineering end. I was more into the history end because I'm a historian. But you get a little dose of everything. And actually, I think we're celebrating right now because one of the graduates of our program is on board the shuttle right now visiting the International Space Station.
So, wow.
I believe her name is Karen Nyberg, and she's on the current flight up there. So it's kind of a special moment for the program. And NASA has, since the time of Apollo, has put a fair bit of resources into education, and this was one of the programs they supported. But there's only, I think there's only really a couple of places that offer a program like this. There's the University of North Dakota and the International Space University, which is in France. I think one or two of the engineering schools have a similar program, too.
Well, for those of you that have children, for those of you that are listening that have young people that might be interested in that, you've just heard of a couple of resources, and there's not, like you said, there's not many. You start off with the very first chapter, a quote by a Russian spaceflight theorist, Konstantin Tsiolkovsky, and I could be mispronouncing
it. Tsiolkovsky, yeah.
And he said, "The Earth is the cradle of mankind, but one cannot stay in the cradle forever." And he chose his words, you said, very carefully to reflect his belief that life is widespread throughout the universe and that earthly life didn't necessarily start on Earth. What a way to begin a book. I mean, this is so neat. I loved it. Here we go. Russian, you know, a space theorist. Here we go, folks. I don't believe we were the only ones here. I think we are the cradle. There's a lot more out there. Get excited. And I just really felt that that was so significant. And I thought, wow, he's already grabbed my attention. And then when you talk about history, you talk about Eratosthenes, who lived in Egypt, and how, I mean, you're going back in history. He was talking about an accurate estimation of the Earth's size. You talk about so many people in history of the written knowledge that we have available to us, and maybe it was even long before then. You have all of this wonderful research about the fascination with the universe that goes back millennia. That must have been fun to research.
Oh, yes. You know, there's all sorts of interesting stories, and I'm sure I missed quite a few of them, but I put as many as I thought, you know, were relevant into this book, because this book is actually kind of part of a series that will tell the whole story of space exploration. And I was kind of asked to look back at the roots, and so it was interesting to go to a few libraries and look at what there was, and of course some of this stuff has been written about before. I was trying to look at it a little bit with fresh eyes and in the light of more recent events. For example, with Tsiolkovsky, who you mentioned there, the whole story of his life is just kind of coming out as a result of the end of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of well known that he was quite interested in space travel and made a lot of important contributions to the theory that led to space exploration. But the motivation behind it was kind of kept hidden in Soviet times.
Yes, and he did not get any recognition, according to your research, until just recently. He was way ahead of the U.S.
That's right. Yeah, it's he was a very for much of his life he lived in very obscure circumstances. He was deaf, but and self-educated, and wound up. He was basically like a junior high school teacher for much of his life, and it was only just towards the end of his life, sort of long after he'd come up with these ideas, that he got some recognition from the Soviet authorities. We have to give them that, in doing that, they didn't talk openly about sort of his motivation.
Now, let's talk about a 27-year-old scientist named Nikolai Kubelchik, and I may be mispronouncing that one too, but he was arrested and thrown into a tiny cell in the fortress of Peter and Paul.
That's right.
And he was getting ready to die. And before he died, what did he do? I mean, this is unbelievable.
Well, he was involved in a secret society that had assassinated the Tsar of Russia. And that's what happens to those people, but he believed very firmly that was a good thing to do. A lot of historians question whether it was, of course, but he also had this other belief in space exploration. So he knew that he only had a few hours left, so he started writing out some of his ideas, and they were hidden, but eventually came out.
Now, let's go back to Tsiolkovsky for a moment. He, in the 1800s, now this to me, when you think about where we are, this is 2008. In 1883, he wrote some notes in a diary. They were published after his death, and it was called Free Space.
Yeah.
He saw, just like in Star Trek, space travel, not having to worry, about gravity. He was working with that. He talked about weightlessness. I mean, it was as if this man, with his limitations, he didn't know any limitations with his mind, and he was sort of like a facilitator of information, passing it on. It's almost as if everything he wrote about his life, that's what he was here to do. That sounds sort of melodramatic, I know, but it's as if this man was here to be able to receive this information, to write it all out, so that there would be those that would come behind, come behind him, that would say, "Wow, look at what he's got! I mean, we can use this," because in his time frame, he was what, a good 75 years ahead of his time.
Yeah, well, of course, it took time for these ideas to be perfected and bear fruit. I'm sure, you know, he did live to see sort of the first burst of enthusiasm for these ideas in the 1920s, but I'm sure he would have been surprised to see how soon people got to the moon. I think he kind of saw that happening in the 21st century, and of course, soon we're going to be celebrating the 40th anniversary of the first steps on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting that sometimes history unrolls in unexpected ways. You know, things moved pretty fast for a time. Since then, unfortunately, they seem to have slowed down a little bit, but that could change.
Very true. Now, again, that's something that Tsiolkovsky recognized. He said there's life is common in the universe and that the same laws apply in all of the universe, and there's no substance that cannot take the form of a living being. The simplest being is the atom. Therefore, the whole universe is alive, and there's nothing in it but life. But the level of sensitivity is endlessly various and depends upon the combinations of which the atom is a part. And this, you know, years after he died, this information is coming out. And of course, today we talk about these things. We really don't think it's that unusual. You talk about Robert Goddard, who was recognized as being the number one in the United States as an American. And this is a man that didn't like to work much with other people. I found it most interesting that Goddard wanted to do everything pretty much by himself, and that really limited him, didn't it?
Yeah. Rocket science or rocket engineering is something that requires teamwork and a lot of it, and he was kind of a man of his time because this was very much a period when Americans looked to the lone inventor figure, like Thomas Edison was, 100 years ago was probably one of the most famous Americans alive, and so I think Goddard was looking to people like that, but even Edison had a team of people working with him that helped him with some of his inventions, and Goddard did have a little team, but it just wasn't big enough, so it actually kind of limited his accomplishments. I think another thing in play is that at the time a lot of people didn't take all that seriously, the work he was doing.
Wernher von Braun is a man that just about everybody knows about, his involvement with the development of the bomb. And you make a statement in your book that von Braun opened up the way to space by combining the latest knowledge of astronautics with gifts of leadership, dedication, and salesmanship. It's almost impossible to imagine the space age of the 20th century without Wernher von Braun. It was his unique fate to have overcome his participation in the century's darkest deed in order to make possible its most sublime achievement. Some people would challenge that statement. Why do you feel that that's the case?
I guess just from my study of his life, I guess, you know, where do you start with him? I mean, he came to the United States in 1945, you know, after having worked for an enemy nation and been very very influential then, and 10 or 15 years later he was very well known in America and indeed very popular, not with everybody but with a lot of people, you know, his leadership was really crucial to developing the Saturn rocket, which took Americans to the moon. He was I just heard all sorts of testimonies to his skill as a manager, and I in another book I did I talked to a lot of people who worked in the Apollo program, and they said, well, they were told one day, well, you have to work with Wernher von Braun, and they said, well, we don't want to do that. You know, we fought in World War II, and he was a bad guy. And but they said, you got to go down to Huntsville and work with the guy. And eventually, they all wound up liking him, and were happy to work with him because he worked quite hard. He knew what people would think and understood that, and he knew how to deal with it.
There was a physician that really dedicated his life to having an understanding of the physiological effects upon flight. I mean, Chuck Yeager, he ended up breaking the sound barrier. When you are moving at certain speeds, you have an impact on the body that is so phenomenal. This was an Air Force officer. His name was John Paul Strapp. And he literally put his own life and his own health on the edge in order to prove things. Tell us what he did.
Well, he was Mr. Rocket Sled. You know, if you ever see film of a rocket sled, or you see the film of the fellow riding the rocket sled, and then the effects on the face where it seems to pop up like that, you are probably looking at a film of John Stapp. And you know, after the war, the Air Force wanted to know about the effects of the high speeds and the high forces that their jet pilots were going to face in these new jet aircraft. And part of that was dealing with sudden stops, sudden deceleration, bailing out of aircraft at high speeds and high altitudes. And Stapp and some of his colleagues did a lot of work on that, not only with rocket sleds, but also with high-altitude balloons and bailing out of these balloons at, you know, what was it, roughly 20, 25 miles up, where there's virtually no atmosphere already. And, for example, Stapp worked with Kittinger, and who set the record for a parachute jump in 1960 that still stands. So Stapp was involved in a lot of these programs, but where he really put himself on the line was with these rocket sleds. And, you know, he broke all sorts of bones and blood vessels and what have you. Like, he put himself in real danger. But there's probably more than a few pilots who are walking around today, thanks to the work he did, you know, that they were able to survive because of the knowledge that he gained.
There was a young Texan by the name of Molina who was really involved in science. He was a lover of Jules Verne, believed in traveling to outer space. He put together a rocket group, and it won the interest of more than one individual. And they did a test on rockets, and they were called the Suicide Squad.
The Suicide Squad.
Yes, and so they, once they got through with their work, they were involved at Caltech, and they were working on a liquid rocket engine. You have all of these different phases. Everything evolved, and actually, as you mentioned earlier, the speed is phenomenal. Von Braun was such a visionary. And I'm going to give a quote that you have in the book. Von Braun warned, within the next 10 or 15 years, and this was in 1952, March 22nd, it was an issue of Collier's magazine, in this article that was written, he said, within the next 10 or 15 years, the Earth will have a new companion in the sky, a satellite that could either be the greatest force for peace ever devised or one of the most terrible weapons of war, depending on who makes and controls it. Also in that same article, there was a description of a space station that could be used for scientific purposes and to give its operators an important strategic advantage in any nuclear confrontation. And 2 years after this article was written, they were talking about space exploration, concepts for rockets, satellites, space vehicles, human flights to the moon and Mars. My goodness. Look at what has gone on for so long to get us to where we are today.
That's right.
And that even included Walt Disney.
That's right. That's right. Well, Von Braun, one of the ways he became famous was that Walt Disney was starting up his television show in the 1950s, and I know there'd be a lot of people who were like me at 6 o'clock on Sundays, that's what they were watching. Walt Disney wanted to do some shows on space exploration, so of course one of the people he contacted was Wernher von Braun, and this is one of the reasons he became so famous, was because he appeared on these shows and was the first person to sort of talk about a way in which it could actually be done, that it wasn't just somebody sort of dreaming in a science fiction book, that this was actually a possibility that could really happen, that we could go to the moon, or we could go to Mars, and go into space. And your quote there, of course, alludes to the fact that it was the middle of the Cold War, space wound up being one of the fronts in that war. There was a contest between the Soviet Union and the United States, and had there not been that competition, I wonder if we'd have gone to the moon even up to this day.
I agree with you, because it was fear that instigated the action of purpose, in this country especially. And it was like, well, competition and fear, because when Sputnik went up, that's when things started happening. You talk about Arthur C. Clarke, and this was something that Arthur C. Clarke, and he was such a visionary himself, and he was one of the top science fiction, if not the top science fiction writer in the world, and he just passed away recently.
That's right.
He had forecast back in the 40s about the geosynchronous communication satellites, and then when the space age really started happening, he had, and this is a quote you put in here, in a few years, every large nation will be able to establish or rent its own space-borne radio and TV transmitters able to broadcast really high-quality programs to the entire planet. This advance, he wrote, would mean the end of all distance barriers to sound and vision alike. Whoa, was he on track?
Yeah, he sure was. He actually joked that if he could have made himself very rich if he'd have patented the idea.
Well, he's right. He would have become rich. Look at how many people have become multimillionaires and billionaires because of that very fact. You know, Chris, you have done such a marvelous job with this book that anyone that would have an interest in technology, in space, in looking at the thinking that has evolved to this point in time and what we had to go through to be able to get to where we are, even though there were the visionaries like von Braun and so many other scientists, they could see it. But it takes a while for other people to catch up with the visionaries. I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Do you have a website that people can go to?
It's a little bit of a complicated thing to get to. spacestheplace.ca/cg.ac HTML.
Say it one more time. Space is the place.
.ca/cg.html.
All right. Well, for those of you that are listening, that are interested in space, love history, and really want to have something, maybe share it with the kids. Give it as a gift to a teacher that is doing technology. I mean, this is a wonderful, wonderful book. Space is the place. .ca/cg.html. Chris Gaynor has been my guest. To a Distant Day, The Rocket Pioneers. This is Donna Siebel, and again, Chris, thank you so much for being my guest. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Siebel on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Siebel, and telephone lines are now open, so if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the toll-free numbers to call in to. 877-8765-227. That's 877-8765-227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. If you're a first-time listener, just know all you need to do is give me your first name or your initial. After that, I'll give you my mental impressions, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. So we'll just take it from there. Just give me a buzz if you want to chat. I'd be delighted to do that. Well, I thought I'd heard about everything. Of course, I never do. There's always something new that's coming up. Have you ever heard of a painting pony? Yep. Well, there is a pony. He was 9 months old. He's absolutely adorable. He's a deep chocolate brown. And do you know what? He's helping to fund research for heart disease at the University of Tennessee. Now, this pony belongs to artist Jessica Drake. And how she found out that her pony was talented in the artistic way? She said he got so intrigued whenever she'd get out her paintbrushes and her paint. And she said, well, that's interesting. I wonder what he would do if I taught him how to hold a paintbrush. I'm not kidding. She really gave a paintbrush to her pony. So she trained him to hold the paintbrush, and she said he began to make brush strokes, so she had non-toxic paints that she could let him use. She knew it wouldn't hurt him. And she said he developed his own technique. He throws the brush on the ground, which picks up gravel and dirt, and then paints with it. Yeah, I'll tell you more about this marvelous little pony. Who knew that this would work towards heart research? I think it's fabulous. This is Donna Siebel, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from, please? Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi, dear. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. My name is Karen with a C, C-A-R-O-N.
All right. And where are you calling from, Karen?
I'm calling from Kent, Washington.
Kent, Washington. Oh, Burr, when are we going to get some sun? I am so ready for sunshine. It's been raining like crazy, and I'm just ready for it. That's all I could say. Oh, well, you don't know any more than I do. Hopefully it's going to come in this weekend. We'll have to huff and puff and blow all the gray away. Okay, let's go for it, Karen. What I'm looking at with you, first of all, is you've got to pay attention to detail, hon. You cannot just wing it. There is a part of you that is so very, very disciplined. And there is another part of you that is almost very childlike, very optimistic, and it's like, I believe in miracles. There's nothing wrong with either one of those, but they get into serious opposition with each other at times. And you've reached what I consider an apex in your life where you must become decisive. You must really look at the details of what are most significant to you. And you must dig in and ask yourself why certain things are so important to you. And you have to do this. Nobody else can do it. When you do this, you're then going to be able to narrow down your focus and concentrate on what you know what your priorities should be. It's very easy for you to get caught up in a thought process without motivating the action. Now, when it comes to somebody else, if they need support or anything else, you have tremendous clarity. But you need to do this for yourself. And this is an opportune time.
It's either next two weeks or next two months.
I'm inclined to think it's more like the next 2 months. This is an excellent time for you to invest in yourself. If you want to ask certain individuals that you come in contact with that you know and you respect what they feel are your strong points, your weak points, if you were they were to recommend something to you, what would they recommend? Just take the information. Don't think that that's it. You take the information and then you sort of sift through it. Throw out what's not of value to you. You'll just say, no, sorry, I'm not interested in being an astronaut, but I am interested in maybe becoming an archaeologist. I mean, I'm just using these as examples, of course. So you need to really get down to the gut level of what is most significant to you. What's going to happen is when you strip away those unnecessary components that you have been so occupied with, and you get down to the bare bones of what you're really focusing on, you're going to take off like a rocket because you're going to have such an intense focus, you're not going to be held back. I believe that after the 16th of June, you are going to find yourself building up a momentum, but that by September the 9th, you're going to see in full movement forward. So this is your job. Nobody else is going to be able to do it. But it's okay to bring other people in to ask for feedback so that you can maintain your course. You know, I was interviewing Chris earlier about rocketry. Well, just know, when the guys are out in space, they still have their team on Earth that they're communicating with. It takes teamwork. So you need to keep your focus, and that's what you're going to do. Also, you need to have your hearing checked. I think that you are losing a certain level of tone in your left ear. I could be wrong, but I am aware of something going on in the left ear. So you must be very thoughtful about having a pair of earplugs with you in your purse, or if you're traveling, you know, whatever you're going to use, have an extra pair of earplugs. So if you need to put them in your ears to keep loud noise. Let's say you were taking some flights somewhere. You want to make sure if you're over the engines, you've got earplugs, because that droning is going to get to you, and it will affect your inner ear. What question would you like to ask me today?
I was thinking of hiring a coach, and I have talked to four different people, and two people come to mind that I like.
Mm-hmm.
One is in California, and he's very expensive. And I have an attraction for him, but everyone is saying, no, no, not him. And there's another one who is local in the Seattle area, and I am also attracted to her, and she is much more conventional. The one in San Francisco is less conventional, and
well,
I'm wondering which one.
Let me ask you this question. Why do you want to work with a coach? What is the objective behind wanting a coach?
To help me get in that gear that you said I was going to get in, to help me get there more clearly and quicker.
All right. If you're looking at that, then you have to be aware of how you want to interview the coach. You don't want someone that's rah, rah, rah. And let's put the money aside. Let's not even go there with the dollars. I know that's important. You know, if someone's going to charge you $15,000 and that's not in your budget, that's not an option. What you want to do is not go by name recognition. But you want to find out what this person's credibility is. Who have they worked with? Can they give you references of people that they've worked with? What kind of professional arenas of expertise are they familiar with? In other words, if you have an interest, let's say, in media, and you want a coach that's going to help you achieve certain goals in media, if that person is a super coach, they better have some knowledge about media. If they don't, you don't want to work with them. Do you see my point?
Yes, and both of them seem similar in that arena.
All right. What arena are you looking at? What particular arena of professionalism are you wanting to move forward into?
I do personal coaching, and I'd like to do more personal coaching and training and perhaps speaking.
Okay. Let me encourage you to consider something. There are some people around in your local area that are known and respected. See if you can work with them as a volunteer. That'll give you an idea of how they operate and whether you really want to work with them. Give yourself a little bit of time here. Don't try to jump into something because something stimulated an excitement. You want to really investigate. You want to take the time because this is going to be a major investment for you.
That makes sense.
And you want to also find out what your follow-up opportunity is. You know, that sometimes people will say, you have, once you pay, and let's say it's $10,000. Once you pay this $10,000, I'm available to you forever. Or then you only can come and see me three times after that. It'll be $500 an hour. You need to know about the basics. You need to know about the follow-up. What kind of an arrangement you will have with them. How available are they? You know, they may have people they will assign you to, that they will not be working with you personally. You may end up with something where they don't work personally with anybody.
Both of these people would work with me personally.
Well, then, again, ask your questions. And I would say if you've already, which you already seem to have done, have talked to people that are familiar with various coaches, you need to ask them, what question should I ask of a coach to determine if they're going to be the right person for me?
Yeah,
That's so important.
And I've done a lot of that, and I have a sense of a little bit of desperation, and the one in San Francisco sounds like a knight in shining armor, like he would come and rescue me. I think that
forget it. That's not going to happen, hon. You have to do the work. That's not going to work.
I get that, but he's clear that I'm going to have to do the work.
Well, I know, but you see, you're going with your feelings. Remember what I said about the little girl?
Yes.
That's what you are having to discipline, is that part of yourself.
Oh.
You're having to discipline the child within you that has the fantasy of princess stuff. Princess fluff, I guess I could call it. It's a tough one. It's not easy, and often we don't realize we have those dualities within us. Corona, I've got to take a break, hon. I'm sorry, but thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome, and I did talk to your husband last night.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Oh, my goodness.
And that's how come I'm on the call.
Well, how delightful.
So
he's a pretty nice guy.
He was great.
Yes. And you take care. I've got to go.
Thanks, Donna.
You're welcome. This is Donna Siebel. Remember, we've got some more good stuff to share with you, so don't go away. We're going to be right back. And phone lines are open, so you can call me, too. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, or Canadians, 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Remember, I was talking to you about Buddy? Well, you know what? Buddy actually, as the painting horse, he'll wait for Jessica when he feels like he wants to do it. He just lets her know by his body language that he's ready to paint. Now, the sad thing is that Buddy was recently diagnosed with Cushing's disease. Of course, this is a hormonal disorder. And she is using the sales of his paintings to pay for his treatment and also to do further research on Cushing's disease with horses. And you can go to a website that Jessica has. It's called thepaintingpony.com. Thepaintingpony.com. That will give you all the information about this wonderful horse. He is absolutely adorable, and it's just every bit of it's just going for something that's very, very good. You know, animals suffer from the exact same diseases that we humans do, and then some that we don't suffer from. It's really fascinating, and there have been research studies that have been done with animals that have helped humans and vice versa. And the reason it is so significant to me, and I'm not talking about this extreme research where they torture animals and all of this stuff for cosmetics and everything else, but I had a Scottish Terrier that, Mr. Smoke, that had a severe kidney problem. And I'll never forget visiting the vet when we finally got the proper diagnosis. We had, I don't know how many vets we went through that just didn't get it until someone said, terriers have their own particular problems. So what you do is you go to this vet, and this was up in the northern part of the state of Washington. So we made a 3-hour trip up to see this vet, wonderful guy. And he regularly, he told me, would go in to medical research libraries on people because he had found ways of being able to help animals because of research that had been done on human conditions. And it was fascinating conversation with this man because he so sincerely cared for especially Scottish Terriers. And he said they have their own problems. And, of course, he diagnosed our dog's condition. And he said, regrettably, there's nothing we can do. He said, I don't understand why this dog is even still alive. He was 12 years at that time. He said his coat is gorgeous. He doesn't even look sick. But he was having a problem with the kidneys, and there was no medicine that he could give him. This was a doctor that had complete honesty about what was going on. And it just opened up a whole different world of understanding that you have to have when you know that your animal is ill and that there are things that they can and cannot do. So it's something that, just like with people, when we can see how we can assist any living creature, it often will turn around and help us in ways that maybe we would never have imagined. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. And I wanted to let you know who my guests are going to be next week. We're going to be talking with Natalia and Susan on Monday. Their teachers wear fur coats. That's going to be a lot of fun. Then we're going to be talking about the best things fathers can do. Will Glennon is going to be my guest on the 10th. And then Highway from Hell, Ruth Moonstone's Star White. Wonderful story and personal experience that she's going to share. Alan Davidson is going to be with us. Body brilliance, physical fitness. This man walked a walk I wouldn't want to wish on anyone. But the result of the changes that he made, this book is just absolutely amazing. And then on the Friday the 13th, we're going to have a best of Donna because I am going to be en route to another part of the country, and our broadcast will be live from the East Coast on the following week. So anyway, lots going on, lots happening, but the shows will still be live, and I will let you know where I am each time we do a program. But we've got a wonderful lineup this month. Know that our email newsletter went out, and if you've not received a copy and you'd like to, then send me an email at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. And then I'll be glad to add you to the subscriber list. You can get it free. You can download it. Share it with friends. Go to my website. You'll find the newsletter portion, and all of that information will be there. Ooh, and we have a yummy recipe this month for barbecue. Mm-hmm. How about some shish kebab? Mm-hmm. Real good recipe, good sauces. So go ahead, check it out. I think you will enjoy it. I've gotten a lot of feedback on this recipe, on this newsletter, and on the recipes as well. So I know that you will find them interesting. Donna Siebel here, and give me a buzz again if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Art Mazmanian is a gentleman that was in a very difficult time of his life. He and his wife, Shirley, they had been married for 49 years. She had a stroke and really went downhill very quickly after that and passed away. He said, my life was changed. He said, Shirley and I had an old-fashioned marriage. He said, I was a baseball coach. She took care of everything else. He said, what was I going to do? What was I going to do? Well, I've got a picture of Art in front of me. He's just a wonderful guy. But in the picture with him are two very fine ladies, and their names are Kathy and Stacy. Well, their story in association with Art, I think, is really a very special one, because one of the things that as a now widowed individual he was having to encounter is that he didn't want to eat alone. He didn't want to eat by himself. So he started going to a restaurant called Plums, and Kathy and Stacy worked there. And he would just talk to them, as so many times we do with a waitress as we frequent a place on a regular basis. And you know what? These gals made a very special difference in his life. My goodness, I'm watching the clock. We're out of time. I'm going to have to tell you the rest of Art's story. How about tomorrow? This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Space travel, all of these wonderful things that we discuss on the Donna Siebel Show, yes, they're part of life. But you know what? You're the greatest source in your life of personal power. And I want you to be able to use it because there are no limitations for you as an individual. There really aren't. You can overcome and can surpass yourself in so many ways. You'll have to call me up sometime and let me know how you do it. I'd love to hear your story. Donna Siebel here. Have a magnificent day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.
Well, partner, we got our pork and beans, we got our coffee, and we got this real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio.